Surge Up. Hello, I'm your host, Dave Davidson. And you might take a break during the day, maybe a lunch break, hopefully not a smoke break, some time of a snack break, a walk break, a potty break. My brother, Dr. Dan Davidson, the host of Anchor Talk, he had a great break today, and we're going to ask him about it. He had an epiphany. Dan, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great, Dave. Always great to be on your podcast. Thank you for encouraging us to surge up in our heart, mind, and spirit.
Thank you, Dan. That's something you did today. Like, you just looked up. You literally told me an hour ago when I was on a walk, we were talking, you said you were just in the mood to coin a term, and you coined a term. I'm like, that's fantastic. Let's do a podcast on it.
Yes. So I was thinking about being grateful, having a heart of gratitude, being thankful, and that, you know, as a foundation to every day, you really can't go wrong. Just appreciating what we have. So I thought about the word gratitude, and I thought, okay, like you said, I just wanted to possibly coin a word. So just looked at the rhyming dictionary, you know, attitude, basically. So here's the word that really kind of struck my heart, diplomatitude. So what's your diplomatitude, Dave, is the topic here. And diplomatic is something that's good to be. We're ready to talk about some different scenarios and how we can apply it in our daily life.
Yes, Dan. And the reason why we might have came to that word was I had a huge, epic conversation with some family members last night, probably one of the most difficult, also rewarding and eye-opening conversations I've ever had as an adult with some family members. And you brought to my attention today that I kind of had to be a diplomat. And fortunately, it worked out really well. But there's just times, Dan, we need to, like, not just have a good attitude, but, like, it might be, like, at a, you know, a meeting for a staff meeting, or you might have a conversation with your spouse and some kids in the car, and, you know, might be going through the drive-thru, and you got to up your attitude and really have a diplomat attitude.
Yes, so let's just establish some meanings of diplomatic, and we think about, you know, having diplomacy from country to country with the embassy and having an ambassador. So we'll talk about that. It is a great, you know, kind of foundational meaning. But what we're really looking at tonight is how to apply then that to our own life. So here's a couple of different dictionary meanings. Having or showing an ability to deal with people in a sensitive and tactful way. So that's pretty good advice, just, you know, in life in general. You know, to be sensitive, seek to understand, and be tactful. So I'll let you comment on that.
Yeah, you shouldn't probably say no to that if you can. And so, Dan, so many times we talk to someone, and you've heard this before, and you might even be doing it right now. We start to think about what we're going to say instead of listening to someone. Now, you got to seek to understand, but more often than not, we're actually thinking about what we're going to say next. And I'm fine with that for you right now because we're doing a podcast, but it sure certainly is a skill to have, you know, listening first and listening better of of someone with a diplomatitude that is full of gratitude.
Yes, absolutely. Here's another definition. If you're diplomatic, it means that you're a person who's able to control a difficult situation without upsetting people, okay? Like, for example, lawyers should be diplomatic in dealing with a judge. And I love that analogy because, you know, lawyers need to be respectful. And they're not going to, you know, yell and scream and use curse words at the judge. There's an honor. And so in a courtroom, although people can get quite emotional and visceral, there's a certain decorum. And certainly the goal, I would think, in most situations is to be diplomatic. And you're probably going to get your point across in a better way, especially to a jury who's listening to you talk and present your case.
Yeah, so we all kind of have little lawyer situations where someone's judging us. Maybe a boss might be the judge, or a coworker might even be in an elevator. You know, like, yes. Who smells here? What floor? And if you have an attitude that you're a diplomat, you can kind of, it kind of sets the tone that you're not just thinking about yourself. You're seeking to not only listen and to understand others, but to serve others. And if you come off with that tone, you're actually just going to be more effective. Part of the conversation I had last night, there was a point where the person I was talking to, they were kind of being argumentative, and I was giving them advice on how not to talk to another loved one. And it was the only type of advice I was trying to kind of slip in. And they were kind of really rejecting it. And I just said, well, you might want to take this if you want to be effective. And my point was, you know, you can say these things that would be hurtful to this other person, or you could listen to my advice. So effectiveness is the goal, would be something that comes to my mind, Dan, with having a diplomatitude. And I just love saying the word diplomatitude.
It kind of rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
Well, it gives me a little more empowerment and a little more awareness that my attitude can play a role. Okay. Like it's not just like, oh, I'm just trying to send out good vibes. You know, I'm really trying to play a role of maybe helping someone reconcile, helping someone understand, not being a hindrance. You know, I have a daughter who interrupts a lot, and a lot of our listeners and viewers and readers can identify with that. And they just blurt out the first thing. Of course, they're a child, they have to learn, but adults do that. It's like, hey, you know, and it's kind of like this, Dan, when you wait the longest to say something and when it finally is your turn, I think once the people who talk a lot, it'll be more likely to listen to what you have to say when you say less, and you'll say it wiser if you've listened, like a diplomat.
Amen. It's been said that there's a reason God gave us two ears and one mouth.
Well, why did he give us two nostrils?
I give up. Why?
I don't know. I was wondering if you had something. Great. Well, okay, I mean, you got two hands.
Can I just follow up on something here? So
I know their answer to my own question, though. Two hands, you can pick your nose with each finger, on the main index finger in each hand. That's why. Go ahead.
There you go. Okay. So with the judge, it's interesting. I was just reading that comment about, or the meaning about, you know, the lawyers and the judge. Let's talk about when people judge us or say something very definitive that has a judgmental attitude towards us. You know, they're hard, rigid. They've got it figured out. They're accusatory. And so how are we going to handle that? If they come in, with a lot of emotion and just, you know, hurling insults and just, you know, accusatory things, are we going to contain ourselves and stay diplomatic and have a diplomatitude, or are we going to fall to their level, so to speak? So,
well, that's the choice we have, but just knowing that your attitude can play more of a role than just vibes, like I was just saying, I think that empowers you to realize that. And then once you have a track record, like, you know, just in the last few days, I've had some better results in this long 90-minute conversation I had. It was very stressful. And these people were kind of coming at me a little more offensively. And it was hard to argue with a person who keeps affirming them, restating what they say, being graceful about it, acknowledging them, and then not lashing back, but then carefully making my point. They just didn't expect that. And it kind of won them over after a time period.
Tell you what, the heart and spirit, and I think you prepared for that, knowing that there, you know, could be some harsh things said and some feelings, and that there was emotion. So I think the preparation and being proactive, and the more we talk about this, Dave, when we're developing this idea, if you were an ambassador, we live in the U.S. Of course, we have a lot of people listening to this podcast from all across the world. So if there's an ambassador from your country, they're representing your country. What an honor, okay, to represent to another country and to be an ambassador. So you are offering in the spirit of communication and partnership and connection, you know, diplomacy. And so I think that's just a great thing to just kind of put on. It's just like, okay, what are you going to wear when you go into this meeting and talk to your boss? Or what are you going to wear when, you talk to a family member or a spouse or a coworker or whatever? and thinking like how an ambassador would talk, and just having diplomacy, I think is a great starting point.
Well, Dan, it's no surprise, no matter what side of the aisle you are politically, that you know that Donald Trump is president. And all I'll say about him is he's, at the time where we're making this podcast, he's about, in the next week, he's about to have a huge summit with Kim Jong-un. And no doubt by the time you read this, you'll know some results of that. But that's the context of when we are talking about this. But Dan, he did a lot of campaigning in Iowa, and America's longest running governor, Terry Branstad, was from Iowa, and he had a lot of connections with China. Chinese presidents had come to Iowa to learn about agriculture in the tenure of Terry Branstad. And there's just a lot of ties with like a sister country of Iowa is China. Well, it was no surprise to the people of Iowa that Donald Trump named Terry Branstad the ambassador, U.S. United States ambassador to China. And just from living in Des Moines and doing political photography, I know Terry Branstad, and he's a great choice to be a diplomat, if you will, an ambassador of America to China. He knows the leaders so well. It was a great choice. No matter what you think of Trump, let me just tell you, that was a great decision.
Yes. So you know someone personally, because I know that you have worked there in the political realm in Iowa as a photographer. And so that's kind of cool to just know someone and just understand that relationship, someone representing to a billion other people, to another nation, yeah. Very powerful.
And no doubt Terry Branstad probably has some thoughts of what he really thinks sometimes, but he's got to represent the United States and the president of the United States. So he has to be diplomatic. He has to have a diplomat attitude. And Dan, in the Bible, it says in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, I believe it's verse 20, that believers in Christ, Christians, they are ambassadors of Christ. Okay. Basically representing the gospel story. If you're a Christian, you know about that. Or if you're not a Christian, you can just understand that it's easy to see that Christians try to be a representative of their belief, as many religions do.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. So it's one of my favorite Bible verses. And so you're taking that, real world example into kind of a faith. And we're going to talk about some other Bible verses in this discussion, Dave, and this is all about your heart and spirit. So I love that, bringing in faith. And, as you go in our conversation, it's like, okay, I'm representing maybe my company, representing, someone else in your family, but you're also representing God. And if you're a faith-based person, your attitude is going to either build up or tear down. Are you going to edify and build up, or are you going to tear down with your words? So those are our choices. Every single relationship, this is all about relationship. Okay. What's your diplomatitude in all your relationships? And we're going to kind of hit some of the top ones here. Since we're talking about diplomats from different countries, I thought I would share a meaning here as far as where some of this came from. And the word diploma is, of course, part of diplomatic. And so the Latin word for diploma, think about when you earn your diploma. Okay, it's a document that says you've achieved a certain level. And so perhaps, to be diplomatic, it's something that in a sense, you may have to earn, okay? It's not something like, oh, I'm just an ambassador, and I'm just going to be diplomatic. It's hard to be diplomatic, isn't it? And a lot of us need even more than a 4-year degree to learn it. Sometimes it's a lifetime to learn that.
Indeed, Dan. The conversation I had with these family members last night, the skills that I did do well, the skills and just the know-how, the psychology, the spiritual part, the prayer, was as a result of every conversation and every difficult trial I've ever had, to just try to be mature and try to do that, to speak with grace, to not offend, to try to stay on focus, because there was a couple, two big issues, two big people in the talk. And I had to try to lead the way and try to keep focused. And it was not easy. I had to draw upon all the experience I had. So that's one thing you want to do when you have you want to improve your diplomatitude, is realize that you've got experience, and that this very trial you might be going through can give you experience in the future. You know, like use it as a training time. Like, okay, I'm going to just try to be overly nice, or give this person grace and listen first for once, you know. Pick a way, a technique. I believe, Dan, there's techniques to have a diplomatitude, and we're going to get to some of them. So let's maybe, Dan, throw out some scenarios in life. We've talked about a lawyer stand, and not all of us can be the ambassador to China, okay? So let's just talk about the workplace. Dan, you were telling me earlier today that, I don't know if it was a patient or a coworker, it doesn't really matter, but you had some things going on in your head, and you knew that if you said those things, it wouldn't be effective, and you chose not to. Can you walk us through that short conversation?
Well, you know, like we start talking about, sometimes it takes a lifetime to develop maybe a discerning spirit and the discipline to say less. You mentioned that before. And so I've tried to develop this habit, this muscle of, you know, we all are going to have an opinion and an assessment of every situation, every person we meet, every relationship we have. We're going to form our opinion. And then when we think we've kind of got things figured out, it's like, oh, I think this person may be doing this for this reason and that, blah, blah, blah. The thing I asked me about, okay, I try to keep an open attitude, and I try not to take offense easily, but I try to think about, okay, this is at least my current view of our relationship and what I think they're doing right now. Would it edify them or the situation if I told them what I thought? It may not. It just may just make things worse. And so I've just kind of learned to develop a discipline to ask myself, you know, is this worth even telling this person? Sometimes it is, you know, and I really pray about it. And so when you get kind of a double, triple, quadruple confirmation, and then you pray about the right timing. Timing is so good. And so I often pray, Lord, if you want me to share this with this person, I'm willing to. Okay, you've laid it on my heart now for a good while. I'm going to pray that you would show me the right time to share this kind of truth and love moment. You know, when you feel like, you know, you really want to share something, but you want to do it in a delicate, peace-filled, grace-filled manner.
Dan, I had a friend, still have the friend, and he had some kind of problem I thought he had, that I knew, I just knew the answer to, the way he was ministering. Actually, he was a youth pastor, and I wanted to tell him what I thought was the problem, but I knew that my attitude was probably worse than the situation. Like, I was afraid that I might come off wrong. I'm like, man, I just knew my heart wasn't right. And this was years ago, and I felt like the Lord just lay on my heart, like, Dave, why don't you pray about that for a little bit, and then after a time maybe you can bring it to his attention. I'm like, fair enough, because it was so important to him that I wanted him to succeed in the area. I thought my attitude would be detrimental in the timing. So I waited, and I prayed about it just a few times over a month. And about 2 months later, out of the blue, this friend brought up the same topic that I had a beef about. And he goes, you know what? I was struggling with this topic a few months ago, and now I think I see it this way, and here's what I'm going to start to do about it instead. And my jaw just dropped. And I told my friend, I go, you're not going to believe this, but I wanted to tell you that 2 months ago, but my heart wasn't right. And I prayed about that a few times. Isn't that crazy that you just randomly brought that up? I mean, there was no precursor or nothing. And it really showed me, Dan, that just because I know something or I want to be right doesn't mean that the wisdom that God gave me at that time, or even the opinion I have at that time, is going to be effective. And so having a diplomatitude, is all about timing and also a little bit of faith with God. If you want to be used by him, if you're a believer and you want to be effective.
You know, there have been so much, that's a great story, Dave, but there have been so many times in my life that I've thought, okay, I really need to say this. And then you might have a conversation and you're thinking about, and then you think later, I'm so glad that that wasn't the right time. I'm so glad, you know, that I didn't say that at that time. So a lot of times less is best. And
one time, oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, in marriage, Dan, the joke is, you know, when a wife asks her husband, do these jeans make me look fat? Now there's a chance for,
yeah, what's your diplomat attitude, right?
Hello. Please continue.
Yes. Dave, I want to share the concept of being a peacemaker. Now, this is from another dictionary, and I like their .com. It says, the word diplomatic. If you have the ability to say the right thing when two friends are fighting, making both sides happy, you are diplomatic. You have tact, and you are a peacemaker. So let's talk about that, because a lot of times in relationships, it's one us and then someone else, but other times, we sense and know that we need to bring a couple other people together, and our role is as a peacemaker. It's part of that diplomatitude.
Yes, you know, you think of like bullies on a sidewalk at a school. You know, we've seen the videos in movies and probably even real videos on YouTube of a teacher or maybe another student on a bus breaking something up. You know, hey, break it up, you know? The homeroom teacher comes out in the hall. I mean, our tempers and our attitudes flare up. And even just two kids fighting over a remote, right, or the same cereal, the last bowl of cereal, you got to break it up. And who's going to do that? A person with a diplomatitude.
Yes, so let me ask you, Dave, you have 8 children. And so you mentioned something about fighting over the remote. I can only imagine the challenges of maintaining a diplomatitude throughout the day at times with 10 people in your house.
Yeah, we have, you know, every family has its psychology. You know, I'm a big on floors. And so when I'm trying to answer your question. When I see someone's shoes out, the way I have a diplomatic attitude is I say, if everyone did this, we'd have 20 shoes out. Like, and I just kind of remind people, we have a big group here. So there's some things you can't get away with. You can't just, there's certain rooms in the house. You can't just leave your stuff out. You can use your stuff for a while, but when you're done, you have to remove them or else we can't function. And so that just pops in my head because we just have to function a certain way. And, you know, Dan, I did this on all my kids at a certain time age. Maybe there was a disagreement or they were fighting over something. And I said, hey, who wants to be grace first? Or who wants to share first? And they didn't really kind of hear the word share. They just said first. I go, who wants to share first? And they'd say me. And I go, okay, great. Thank you for sharing first. And so the first time they were tricked because they didn't really hear the word share. But other times I'm like, I will say things like, I'm looking for a peacemaker. Who's going to be the one to quell the storm? My homeroom teacher in high school said he's looking for a scapegoat. He literally would look for people to paddle. He just wanted someone, the whole class, to be quiet. He'd look for someone to get in trouble. I hated that. I look for peacemakers, Dan. And there's a great Bible verse in Proverbs chapter 15, the verse 1. One of the best Proverbs to commit to memory, or at least the meaning. It goes like this. A harsh word stirs up anger, but a gentle answer it calms it, or, you know, it hushes it. You know what I mean? It calms it. And there's different translations. And so, you know, I say, look, who's going to be that peacemaker. So when I hear my kids kind of escalate, I'm like, I go, oh, that went another head. Like, I kind of like go in there and like act like I'm Howard Crystal. Okay, he raised his voice right here, and she's going to raise her tone. Oh, we have an eyebrow raise. Okay, who's going to be the peacemaker here? Who's going to say the next thing a little nicer, a little softer? Maybe someone's going to say that they listened and I understand. Who's going to be the peacemaker here? Because an argument that escalates, no one calms down. No one has that gentle answer. You keep stirring up the wrath of anger, you know? And so probably in our house, since you happen to ask that, Proverbs chapter 15, verse 1 is gold over here at the Davy Bunch headquarters.
That's awesome.
A soft answer turns away wrath.
Yes.
A gentle answer, but a harsh word stirs up anger. There's a lot of different translations. Those are some takes on it.
Well, and we talked earlier how we are ambassadors of Christ in our faith. And so I just found another definition of diplomatic. This is interesting. It pertains to exactly reproducing the original, like a diplomatic edition. And so the concept there is when you are an ambassador and you're representing your country, you're reproducing, you know, and you're representing. And so the attitude we have, are we reproducing the original spirit that God would have us, that you know, we hopefully is in our heart at that moment, you know, or what are we reproducing? Okay. Are we producing the original soft spirit, a gentle spirit, or reproducing the emotions that you just fired us up because we heard this and then this person said this and then we take offense? So I think that's a kind of cool. What are we reproducing in our attitude?
Yes, because it's going to, especially when you work with the same people, live with the same people, you're going to get a track record of how you handle things. And I know some of my kids, as soon as they get a little agitated about whatever the frustration is, they think, well, this person never comes to my side. They don't rally. They're going to roll their eyes any second. And we almost start to anticipate the bad attitude track record of the person that we interact with. And that can go the other way too. I've had a joke with my wife for years, Dan, and you know this, you've heard me say it, but I also mean it. First of all, if someone asks you to do something, you can say, I will be glad to. And the beauty of that phrase is, if you don't have a good attitude yet, you can say, I will be glad to. If you're going to do it anyway, you might as well say you're glad to, whether you're glad to yet or not. And then what I do for my dear wife, Joan, is she'll say something. And I actually want to take things off her plate. She's a stressed out mom who's a nurse, and she's got 8 kids. So when she tells me something, I actually treasure that. It's a chance for me to serve her. So I'll actually say the words in a diplomatitude way. Thank you for bringing to my attention your needs. Isn't that crazy? And I'll say things like, I want to serve you. Thanks for giving me a chance to serve you. And I even say that to our dad. You know, he gets those long toenails. He's 83. He can't bend down. And it's a chance for me to serve him, kind of like washing the feet of the disciples. And I don't want him to be embarrassed. If I'm going to do it, I might as well make him feel good about it. So last time I cut his toenails, Dan, I washed his feet. I said, Dad, thanks for giving me an opportunity to serve you. He may not make the whole year. You and I talk about this. I'll be looking backwards in my life and thinking, I'm glad I not only clipped my dad's toenails, but I'm glad I did it with a good attitude so he felt not embarrassed and he felt loved.
I love that, Dave. You talked about stress and taking some of that burden off your wife, Joan. Here's another definition. Who's under any stress? Is anyone under stress from time to time? Yeah. And that helps us understand the other person. You know, Stephen Covey in his 7 Habits book. Of highly effective people, yes. He said, seek to understand. So seeking to understand the other person's situation. So one of this definition here is in being tactful and having a conciliatory heart especially in situations of stress. Okay, so diplomacy, you know, you're when you're negotiating, when you're, you know, there's kind of, you know, you're trying to get on the same page. It can be stressful. This isn't, you know, your ambassador to a foreign country. They're just not going there on vacation. You know, there's stress, but life is filled with stress. So again, having a heart that is filled with a diplomatitude is ready. It's prepared and anticipates that, yeah, my spouse, my mate, my partner, my coworker, my kids may have had a stressful day today. Well, what a great attitude that you just brought up to them. How can I bless them? How can I serve them? How can I be proactive? And I think about the book, The Five Languages of Love, Love Languages. And, you know, a lot of people, if you know what their love language is, and maybe it's gifts of service, and you go ahead and mow the lawn or do something else or that, you can bless them in a way that would take off that stress and burden and having a good diplomatitude.
Yes, Dan. Knowing your role, you know, Dan, there's that quote out there. It says, everyone's going through something. If you meet five, if you walk by five people, like let's say in line to get pizza or something, you can probably be certain that one or two of those people are having a tough time in life. Maybe not right then. Maybe they're battling a parent with cancer, marriage problems, but they're going through something. And there might be a reason for their bad attitude if they're at the counter. You know, Dan, I like how you try to really bless people when you go through the line at a grocery store. Because you have a chance to bless that person. They might have talked to 100 people that day, checking out groceries or being a teller at a bank. But you can come in there and try to be a blessing to them and say some jokes or have some interaction that they normally don't get to experience. I experience that when I talk to people on the phone, they're usually getting my information. Usually that's for Social Security number, the bank, or my address. And I just start giving them extra answers. As a joke, you can use this yourself. I start telling them my favorite color is green, that I like long walks on the beach. And they just never have heard that before because they know it's terrible to ask people these stupid rote questions. So I just start giving them random answers. And most of the time, they really start laughing. And that little nuance of breaking up their day of like just kind of, you know, that's what humor is. You know, you pull the rug out. You know, they weren't expecting that. I'm not saying it's like totally hilarious, but it lightens them up and it can make someone's day. And it's a way of being diplomatic. Humor can be a part of diplomatitude.
Yes, and you said that everyone is going through something. I would highly recommend anyone listening to this to go to YouTube and just search for Chick-fil-A story video. And they produced in 2010 a video called Every Life Has a Story. It's very short, just a few minutes, but it just has music in the background, and then it has people coming in, you know, to Chick-fil-A, and then a little bubble pops up, and it says, you know, this person, their son just was deployed overseas, you know, in the Army, and then okay. Someone else comes along, and it's just like she just lost her mom to cancer, or you know, and so. You're just thinking, hey, you're going to this fast food place, and there's just all these people, and we can so easily be self-focused, right? Because we're thinking about what we want to order and what our problems are. I get teared up every time I see this video, and I watch it about once a year because it helps you realize that everyone has a story, every life has a story. And I think when we realize that and seek to understand. I'm a chiropractor, Dave, so people come in pain. They're frustrated often. They're not able to work. Maybe it's affected their ability to earn money and the income. Maybe they haven't got a satisfied diagnosis. There's a lot of frustration. And myself and then my staff, you know, we really try to realize, hey, we want to give grace on the front end. And sometimes someone can come in and they have a sharp, coarse attitude. That if you didn't prepare your heart knowing that, hey, people are coming in pain, you could kind of react like, whoa, what's their story today? You know, what side of the bed did they wake up on? Well, they happen to be in severe back pain or just whatever, migraine headache. And when I start asking them about their condition and then finding out more about their history, light bulbs are popping out everywhere. Well, gosh, if no wonder they were a little short. This is what they've been going through. And when, as I talk to them, I always try to affirm them and say, sometimes I just stop and I just look at them and say, wow, you have really been through a lot these last 6 months, haven't you? And anyway, I love this video. Every life has a story. Very powerful. I would highly recommend people watching it.
Well, that's great recommendation, Dan, and really good insight from a doctor having a staff that tries to preemptively give people grace, knowing that they're coming in pain. And whether we see that video or not, you painted a great picture to know that, yeah, people are going through things. And so when you have that energy to give energy out, you never know how God's going to use that. You never know how that's going to bless someone. And so, and Dan, you know, when we think of the word diplomat, we often do think of someone trying to help reconcile, like you kind of read the definition there. You know, there was a couple years ago, I had a business partner in a project, and then all of a sudden we had a really rough month and we were not seeing eye to eye. We didn't talk to each other for a month and we were very angry at each other. And this person has a tendency, when they're angry, they write off a letter or a tweet, and it's, you know, they always usually kind of regret it. But I was on the edge of that. I was in the receiving end of that once, and I kept rereading this letter, and it was a terrible letter, and I took it very personally. And so I wrote this person back, but never sent it. Just got my anger out. And then just to be able to work with them, someone suggested, well, first of all, I wanted to be biblical. And we, in the chapter in the Bible, Matthew 18, that's where it talks about if a brother offends you, or if you've offended a brother, go and try to make peace with them, and then bring another person if you have to, you know, and there's a couple chances. There's a biblical process, and it works. And so I thought, you know what, before we throw out the baby with the bathwater, before, you know, we try to start doing legal things and just jump into conclusions because we're so angry. It was suggested that, you know, he would bring in one person that I would approve of, and I would bring a person that I would approve, that he would approve, and that they would try to mediate. Okay. And I thought, hey, let's give this a try. And lo and behold, those two people were very effective. And they kind of did some of the talking at first because they knew each side of the story, and we listened. And it wasn't long into the interactions where, sure enough, there was some blatant misunderstandings that we were both going on. And so we're like, whoa, you were thinking that, you know? And like, and I was thinking this because of this false basis. And fortunately for us at the time, a lot of the reasons we were angry and a lot of the assumptions we were drawing energy from, they didn't even have substance. And so the few things that were left over were pretty normal things that once we calmed down and these people were mediating for us, and it ended up being a very positive thing. And to this day, now that we went through the trenches, like, you know, like a war, we actually are better friends now because we went through a biblical process. We had a healing of it. And now we actually look out for each other more and root for each other's family all the more because we have a better understanding. It's the way God intended relationships to be. He wants you to come to him and show him his power working through you. He wants to use some dynamics in his own God's word, okay? Like the peacemaker beatitude there in Matthew 5, or whether it's the people that were helping us in that situation, they were being like ambassadors for Christ out of 2 Corinthians 5. Whether it's Proverbs 15:1, a gentle answer, all these dynamics came into play for Matthew 18, and there was a healing process. And now we have a diplomatitude to each other to this day.
Dave, that's very powerful. And it just shows the power of having that right grace-filled attitude going into a situation. And I think you mentioned misunderstandings. I'll just share one of principles that it's taken me nearly 60 years to learn here on God's green earth, and that is to be very careful about being offended easily. We often take offense, and there's a lot of references in the Bible to having an offensive attitude. Now, other people can be offended easily, but we can be too. So I always pray about being aware when other people may react and be offended, kind of jumping to conclusions and just like, okay, well, gosh, they may not realize this or that. Gosh, I do that sometimes too, you know? And that's probably what they must not really know what I think in my heart. They must have assumed something. So what I've learned, and I'm going to share an acronym here, is false assumptions. When we make false assumptions, we more easily take offense. And when we, let's say we, you know, to be diplomatic, we're trying to build bridges, not tear them down, right? We want to build up, edify rather than tear down. We want there to be a connection. So you think about relationships, we want to be in the bridge building business. Well, if we make false assumptions about other people, their attitudes, their motives, and you know, everything, their intentions, which by the way, how do we know their intentions? We sure have a lot of ideas about it. We assume it, but there's no way we knew, you know, how could we know? But when you make a false assumption, okay, it distorts everyone's reality. And that is an acronym that I came up with just so I can remember it. FADER, FADER, false assumptions distort everyone's reality. And so if you're trying to brighten up your relationship with someone, you can either turn, you know like the fade switch or the dimmer switch on a light. Are you turning it to make it brighter and more illuminating? Or are you dimming it? Are you fading it? Your relationships with other people will start to fade if you make false assumptions. And so it's a two-way street. One is we have to be mindful about making false assumptions ourselves, but also we have to recognize when other people may be making false assumptions, and then in that diplomatitude, go and say, you know, you really said, when I said this, you seem to really, maybe I hit a nerve or something. Can we just talk? Because maybe you may not understand what my intentions were. And I've learned that, Dave, I am not a confronting person naturally, okay? I'm a peace filled and I just assume keep the peace. But I've learned that communication, especially in a tactful, graceful way, is always a good step forward. Because the longer I stew and brew on it, the more false assumptions, it just grows like, you know, those little sponges that, you know, you fill them up with water and they just grow. They become gigantic.
So sponges in the water? What sponges in the water?
You get the little dinosaur sponges and, you know, they're just really small. And then you put water in them and they just grow really big. Come on.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, awesome. We can just magnify things and just like a long shadow, you know, can just cast a dark, you know, path that's much bigger than what, you know, the person is or the thing that is casting that shadow. Really got to be careful about false assumptions.
So, Dan, I love your acronym FADER. That's just great that you made an acronym. You're basically keeping yourself accountable. You're reminding yourself of a principle and you're realizing the role a diplomatitude can have. It's kind of like an aha moment for you and you're affirming it. It's an aha affirmation.
Yes, it is. That it's one of my big aha affirmations of my life about false assumptions. And I have talked myself out of so many. You start going down a path emotionally. It's like, oh, well, they said this. They probably meant this. It's like, whoa, time out. How do I know that? I'm assuming it. Is it a true assumption or a false assumption? Now, you know, if they do it 100 times, it's like, okay, I'm starting to piece this together. But yeah, we're human nature, bro. I mean, we often just react, you know, and.
And we want to be justified so often that our bad attitude or a false assumption or that we want to be right more often than we want to reconcile, which was a big premise of the huge conversation I had last night. And Dan, I was at a fundraiser for a school, their annual banquet, a Christian school, a lot of different people, walks of life in there. And it was a tribute thing. It was this great banquet. And I see this lady who I've taken pictures of her family, I know her husband. I had pitched some ideas to her husband. I had wanted to hire her for my art show a couple years ago. And I really felt between the two of them, they had blown me off. And I was offended. I'd known them for churches. I've been friends with them 15 years. And I literally saw her in registration. And I thought to myself, I hope she doesn't notice me. I registered with someone else. And then she said, hello. And I'm like, oh, great. You know? So I'm just like, didn't have it in me right then to talk. Cause in my mind, I'm offended. She never got back to me when I tried to hire her. Right. So then the banquet happens. And I'm a servant again. I'm trying each year at the banquet. One little thing I do, I try to help with the chairs, you know, at this particular event. And then she's there again. Lo and behold, she was one of the people who planned this event. So then I like was forced to talk to her. And, you know, Dan, I'm kind of honest person. I'm not always confrontational, but I don't mind talking about things. I didn't want to talk to her at the beginning of the banquet, but then I was ready to. And I said, you know, I got to be honest. I feel like I've really lost touch with you and your husband. And here's why. I sought you out and I don't, you know, it's my understanding. I was very delicate because I said, it's my understanding that there was no response. And I've been kind of, you know, a little bit bitter about that. She goes, well, I did try to reach you a certain way. Now, I wasn't really sure the accuracy of it, but I did see the sincerity somewhere in there. There must have been some misunderstanding and all the energy and all the right, you know, that I had against her and her husband and all that, you know, that charge, that case I had against them all of a sudden was suddenly dropping with her attitude and the fact that she kind of felt a little bit blown off by me. I'm like, no, you can't feel that way. I felt blown off by you. And then we realize, I go, you know what? Maybe we had a bona fide, real life, big grown up person misunderstanding. Because it wasn't like their track record overall. And they're the type of people I'd love to give a second chance to. She's right there. And we reconciled because I brought it up. But I said it kindly. I wasn't in her face. I said, it's my understanding. So that's a phrase. That's a tactic. That's a technique of having a diplomat attitude. Say things like, I'm seeking first to understand, which you alluded to when you reminded us of the habits of the seven. Covey's seven habits. And then when I said it was my understanding, it gave her a chance to correct the understanding and it wasn't confrontational.
Great story, Dave. Reconciliation is the goal here. I want to just mention a thing that comes to my mind and heart about being proactive in our communication when we know that we're walking into a situation or a coming events, future events, that there could be some sensitivity. Now, this is real life. I'm going to bring up Little League, okay? My two boys, Jacob and Noah, played Little League baseball, and I had the opportunity to coach. And for several years, we won first place, which meant I was the all-star coach for actually 5 years in a row. It was a great joy to work with these kids and, you know, just build them up. But with the All-Star, it was kind of unique because everyone's child was the top player on their team, and they're used to playing every game. Well, the way it is, you can only play 9 people in baseball. You had 13 people on the team. Each player had to play at least half the game. So what I learned to do is be proactive, and I would get all the parents. I'd have a parents' meeting before. I said, let's do some numbers here. I have to start 9 people, but then I have to – substitute 4 people in for 4 of the 9. Each game, only 5 players are going to play the whole game. But I'm doing my math here. 8 will play a half game. That means 2/3 of the players who are used to playing are going to play the half game. Now, I'm going to tell you in advance, when and if that happens to your son, you are going to probably just rise up emotionally. I mean, I just called it way ahead of time. And I said, you're going to feel, what? Are you kidding me? They're taking out my little Johnny and putting in, you're all all-stars. And so I learned to be proactive in sensitive future events. And I said, listen, I'm just doing the best I can. It's probably going to be a different person or different set of 5. Who's hot? Who's really paying attention? Who's been, you know, working hard in practice? There's so many things. There's no way that you will know, and it's too explain. Plus, I'm human. I'll make some mistakes. So I'm asking you in advance for understanding about the system, just the numbers, but also just that, you know, I'm trying to do the best job I can. And, you know, you probably want to win the game too, right? So anyway, that's just a simple example that I learned to be proactive in system situations.
It's a great story, and you had great wisdom, but also didn't you have – it must have not have been an All-Star game. I think it was American Legion. Didn't you have a diva guy that you told him that sometime during the season he would be benched, and we did? It all backfired. And I mean, I don't want to steal your thunder. Tell us that story too.
Well, in the same realm, no, it wasn't American Legion. It was Little League. This was regular season. I thought it was important for all the top players to at least one game out of the year to sit out half the game and let one of the kind of reserves who usually only play half the game play the whole game. And so I told the players and the parents in advance. Now, I said it's probably – if things work out, it's going to be either a game that we're really behind in, it's kind of a blowout game, or really, really ahead game. So sometimes, you know, by the third inning – we're ahead 15-2. I'd go to Joey and say, "Hey, Joey, remember what I said at the beginning of the season? I'm taking you out, and I'm letting, you know, so and so stay in the whole game. This is your time to sit the bench and be a good teammate." But see, I'd already talked to him about it. Now, one of the players' dads apparently wasn't at the meeting, and his player, you know, usually started, and I did that, and he was so offended that he took his son off the team and they never played again. So, I mean, so this reminds me, bro, is that I did everything I could to communicate ahead of time and to, you know, say it. And there's not one parent in the stands that didn't understand what I was doing. We were ahead like 20-1. You know, yeah, you put new starters in there, take the starters out, you know. But this one dad just couldn't handle it that I took his son out of the game. And so it reminds me of a Bible verse in Romans, and I don't know the address, but it says, "As far as it depends on you, be at peace with your brother." Translation of that is, you can only do what you can do. You can't make everyone else be peaceful and have a diplomatic attitude. You're only responsible for you, and you can't sometimes change a coworker or even a spouse in a certain area, or someone, you know, you can only be responsible for your side of the equation with a relationship.
Dan, that's a great Bible verse to mention, and it comes from a great chapter in Romans. There's really, every chapter in Romans is awesome, but two of the chapters are super mega awesome, 8 and 12. It's actually Romans 12:18. And it goes like this: if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone.
That's a good translation.
That's the NIV. The NIV.
Yeah, so diplomatitude. What is your diplomatitude? Waking up in the morning, going to work, going to church, with your spouse, with your kids, with your neighbor. And I've been writing down some words here, Dave. Peacemaker, being agreeable, reconciliation, tactful, being sensitive. One dictionary just said, be nice. I mean, you know, be nice. That's just pretty simple.
What was that? The kindergartner's dictionary?
No.
Okay.
So I want to share another thing about, I said that the Latin word diploma is where diplomatic means. And so there's a reference here in Wikipedia that the word diplomacy and diplomat appeared in the French Revolution. It's derived from a Greek word, diplomates, I believe. And it's the holder of a diploma, referring to documents of accreditation from the sovereign nation. So as we're talking about the Bible, bro, I mean, that's pretty cool to say, okay, so I'm an ambassador of Christ, and in my faith, I'm representing, you know, literally godly, grace-filled attitudes and approaches to my relationships. And what's my diploma? What are my documents, okay, of accreditation, so to speak, from this sovereign state? It's the Bible. Okay, now we're sharing a Christian faith in this podcast. It's the Bible. That's our diploma, so to speak. The diplomat's documents. I just think that's pretty cool. And I don't know if the Greek word diplomates is in the Bible or not. It probably is. It'd be cool to see. And you have your little Bible word search logos, D-I-P-L-O-M-A-T-E-S, the Greek word. So it might be kind of cool to look that up.
Yeah, if I had that software open, thanks. No. But Dan, I'll just say right now, the Blue Letter Bible app looks up the Greek if you knew the verse. So that's great to understand what diplomat. I think as we've talked tonight, Dan, and we've given examples of, you know, in a marriage or in a checkout lane or as a coach, I'm realizing that there's a role to play as a diplomat. And when you intentionally choose that better attitude, I know that when I had this conversation, I'm just going to tell you, it was with my in-laws. That's not an easy conversation. I really had to be careful because there's years of potential misunderstandings to be created or potential hurt to drum up. And so I really use careful words, kept affirming people. And then it's amazing that people will not, they will come down their high horse if you continue to respond in a gentle way. You know, and tone has so much to do with it. Of course, we know that research is a study that 80% of what we convey to people is nonverbal sometimes. You know, so our body language has to be diplomatic. It can't be in your face because we have to remind ourselves that if we are filled with grace and have a diplomatic attitude, we're going to be more effective. And then over time, in a prayerful time, you know, there's going to be a time that you even let something slip, an insult. You know, you can have the gift of sarcasm, but the real gift is holding back sarcasm and having the gift to think of snarky things and not say it. And maybe say it at the right time. It's all, you know, I can't put every relationship in a box or every conversation, but I will say this. The person, if someone walks by, if two people are arguing, there might be a fool in there and then someone trying to keep cool. But if they're arguing with them, the people walking by don't know the difference between the fool and the person that's just making the latest, you know, one comment that's snarky. Okay. So one way to put it, Dan, is to not drop down to their level.
Sure. I want to share a couple quotes here in closing, Dave. It's pretty cool. Thanks for listening to those on the podcast. And Dave and I just like to take a concept and just talk like we have here and just kind of see what God can stir up in our hearts about this, and also be a template for a future book project. And so if you just put in Google, you know, how to be diplomatic, okay? I mean, all cool kind of things are coming up. And there's a site called Skills You Need. And so they're pointing out some things. I'm just going to hit some bullet points here. You want to have some good common sense, good judgment, a tact, as we said, attentive listening. You talked about that, Dave. Want to react appropriately. Emotional intelligence. Showing empathy, being empathetic, you know, putting your, you know, kind of like the walk a mile in someone else's moccasins too. Building rapport, love that word, building rapport, and politeness. And, you know, just be polite, be nice. Now here's two quotes that I'll share. David Frost once said, "Diplomacy is the art of letting somebody else have your way." and then Isaac Newton, this is a good one. Isaac Newton, tact is the art of making a point without making an enemy.
Nice.
I think that's a good one to wrap it things up. Tact is the art of making a point without making an enemy. Sir Isaac Newton.
Love it. I think I've heard some of those before. And boy, you talk about a good quote. It's kind of like a quote to self, Dan. A quote to self.
Yes. Well, Dave, in closing here, why don't you just share? I mentioned that we do this from time to time. We're doing it on Anchor as an interview. We're going to have this audio available. If you can just share how, when we have an idea, and it's great having a creative partner, we just talk about this. This sets the stage, I said, for a future book project. Just give a quick overview, Dave, of the process that you do, because you're kind of the master at this.
Well, we had the idea during the talk, and we had a term. We're going to skip this, but you figured out a way to convey that on social media. You picked out a term. We decided that we would call each other on Anchor and the Anchor app so both of our voices could be recorded, and we conducted the interview and the talk by giving each other chances to talk before we went on to another topic. We made sure, you know, we kind of have a rhythm, and knowing that we can edit this, so we get what we dictated, we transcribe it through a service, we edit it down, we can start a rough draft of a book, you know, and then, you know, take things out, maybe like this explanation, or when I couldn't pronounce some, I had some tongue twisters there, you know, that wouldn't be transcribed, or the noise you're making right now. And now you got a rough draft. Once you edit that down a few times and take out the riffraff, you know, filler statements, which are okay for a podcast, but not, maybe you don't want to read that. You got yourself a rough draft, and then you can look at that and then add what you missed. And then you're already halfway there to writing a book. And it doesn't have to be long. It could just be 30, 40 pages and add some pictures. And that's part of the process of doing that. And then you do that with Amazon and a program they call KDP. And you can know more about that, wanting to be an author and getting inspiration from us, at our Facebook page. Our domain is pointed there. It's authormotivator.com, where you'll get quotes, videos, and insight on how to publish and write and publish your own book.
That's a great overview, Dave. And as always, I thank you for being amazingly prolific and just pushing the envelope. And this is a good example. I just mentioned I had an idea, and you said, hey, let's podcast on it, and we'll go for there. So if in doubt, just do it and get it started. You know, there's nothing as a writer or a content creator of any content, there's nothing more exasperating than a blank page or canvas or a blank screen. You got to just start. And so what we've done tonight, we have found, is a great muscle, is just start talking with someone and then you have these ideas. Like Dave said, not all of these would make a final project. And we don't know if we might do this book this week, next month, or next year. But at least for tonight, we got it out. And
we got the main energy out to be able to edit it. You can't edit it. You can only edit in rough draft. You can't edit a blank piece of paper. Okay.
Oh, sounds like that should be a quote, Dave.
I think I've already made a meme on it before. Yeah, man. Now we have.
You can't edit a blank. Yeah, piece of paper. I love it. That's good. You got. I mean,
you can only
edit.
Yeah, you have to have a rough draft. Another way to say it is, you have to have a rough draft to edit. It has to be rough. Of course, it's going to be rough. That's okay.
Yeah, that's the whole idea of a rough draft. I mean, So great job, Dave, thanks for sharing your stories about having a diplomatitude.
Yeah, great term, Dan. Thanks for letting me be part of it. Take care, God bless, and rock on.
God bless.
podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.